When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, your athlete of the week day, Colin. Welcome to Texas Sports Unfiltered. So, you know, a lot of different ways we can go. First thing I was thinking is just we'll get into the Oklahoma class today, man. You know, they have two announcements coming up for some of their targets. I know Malik Hawkins is today, but Trent Wilson's also today as well, right?
Correct. Yeah. Malik Hawkins announcing his commitment live with our friends over at Dave Campbell's Texas Football on their YouTube channel. He's going to go live at noon central. So just after I hop off the show, we're going to see where he ends up. But obviously, the 24/7 Sports crystal ball favoring Oklahoma there. So feeling pretty good. His dad played at Oklahoma. His brother is currently at Oklahoma. So looks like that could be the first domino to fall today for OU. And then, like you mentioned, Trent Wilson, defensive tackle target for Oklahoma out of the East Coast. Kind of a surprising one, to be honest. It's been one that's been interesting to track because he just decided out of the blue that he was going to make his decision this week on this Wednesday, and he had just visited Ohio State, but intel indicated that Oklahoma had actually covered a lot of ground there. So a couple of really big decisions for OU. You've got Cooper Perry today as well, but I like Oregon, obviously. And so a little bit of a busy day. This show should make it even better, right?
Yeah. So, you know, OU, they've got over a dozen commitments already, right, in 2025?
So correct.
They do it a lot different than Texas does. Texas usually likes to, usually wait till around this time of the year to really start kind of going all in on guys. They'll use the spring and the dead period during the month of February to really dig deep and evaluate guys that, you know, they want to go all in on, or they want to decide, you know, we're not going to take this kid. Whereas Oklahoma, they're kind of going balls to the wall with relationship building when these guys are sophomores. So, I mean, with the plus 12 commitments they already have, you know, who are some guys that you really like? You know, I know it's kind of setting the floor. It's a lot of three stars right now, and, you know, you'll go big game hunting later on. But, you know, who are your favorite guys in the class so far, and what do you like most about it?
Yeah, man, Oklahoma is a very unique program to cover in that if you're not on top of what they're doing, not just in the senior class, but the junior and even sophomore, you're behind the eight ball, right? This program has made it very apparent they prefer to recruit ahead of each class, try and get in front of the curve and build those relationships early. And I think for the most part, it pays off, right? They're currently in the very early portion of this class rankings in the top six, won't probably crack back into the top five. They were there for a little while, but two more potential additions today. You just see a lot of these guys winding down their decisions. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that not only does OU try and recruit a little bit ahead of time, but they also obviously have kind of their OKG model, our kind of guy status. And it leads to a lot of decisions being made early in the process. I mean, they had 27 or 28 signees in their 2024 class done and sealed by the time Brent Venables was done with his morning signing day press conference. And so this class specifically in 2025, like you mentioned, they're off to a really good start. Now, you got to finish, but I do like some of the pieces that they've been able to close on early. I think the easy one to point at is probably Ryan Foje out of Bridgeland. I think some Texas fans might recognize that name. He's the teammate of a Texas offensive tackle target in Jontay Newman. But Foje, Oklahoma was his first offer, and I went to go see both Jontay and Foje, and you look at Jontay, he looks like $1 million. But I remember Foje comes onto the field. I'm like, man, I can see Jontay all four quarters. Let me see what this Foje kid looks like, because his only two offers at the time were Oklahoma and Nebraska. That was it. And, man, that first pass set, you see him get into it, and you just see the build, the arm length. I think Ryan Foje was a heck of a get for them. He started out as a really high-graded three-star for us, and now he's in the top 80 to 90 overall in the country. So Foje is awesome. I think a more Oklahoma-specific one that Texas fans may not know a ton about, Elijah Thomas, won the wide receiver MVP award at Under Armour Dallas really talented, twitched up athlete at the receiver position that Emmett Jones loves. I really like this guy too. His tape, when you turn it on, it's just like, man, no one can get this guy. And so those are kind of the two that I really, really like that Oklahoma has been able to close on. Obviously, it's a very interesting cycle to follow, but kind of one more towards the bottom of the list that I would shout out. I would probably say Owen Hollenbeck was a kind of a nice find for them specific to this cycle. You know, Owen is a powerlifting background, really strong, heavy center with great character, physical, aggressive. And Oklahoma center is kind of a unique position for them right now, Jordan. And they really needed to get a center take and get it right. And they were able to close on Owen Hollenbeck. And a lot of that obviously had to do with the fact that they were recruited both him and his former Melissa teammate, Nigel Smith. So it's a good-looking group. Obviously, they're looking to expand it literally in the next hour or so. So it's a nice cycle to this point for Oklahoma, and I think that trend should continue.
Yeah, no, I always love the Foje stories. I remember I went out, I think it was week three, I went out to Alvin to go see Shadow Creek and Bridgeland play with Will Turboff from our Baylor site. And I was mostly there to see Jontay Newman. And then at the time, the three Shadow Creek kids with offers, there's now four of them. One of them, a former commit, Anthony Williams. And I remember when Bridgeland runs out onto the field, we were a little late, so I missed warmups. But, you know, I'm there for Jontay. And usually when you're going to see an O-lineman, you don't really need to get a roster because you can tell who it is.
Yeah.
But Jontay ran out there, and I'm like, wait, hold up. Who is this other guy? And we ended up going to the Max Preps roster, and like, they have a Ryan Foje kid. I never heard of him. He wasn't on Texas's roster. And like you said, at the time, he only had his two offers from the summer from Oklahoma and Nebraska. So Turboff and I were kind of blown away. And I remember even sending him to people at Texas, and you know, I'm not sure what it was. Texas has different ways they evaluate kids in Oklahoma and other schools, obviously, but weren't really in love with him at the time. They ended up inviting him to the junior day where he earned an offer at the junior day on January 20th. But, you know, he was getting off the bus, and other guys in the market are wanting to interview him. They're like, okay, big offer, big-time prospect. And I'm over here kind of scratching my head like, this kid's already going to OU, y'all. You know, I think he was silently committed by that point. And they just did a great job start to finish running that one. But, you know, you brought up Malik Hawkins, the younger brother of current freshman quarterback Mike Hawkins, and their father also obviously played at OU as well. And then Trent Wilson, Cooper Perry could be signing soon. Who are some other guys that the OU's after that could be announcing soon, or maybe could be shutting their recruitment down soon in favor of Oklahoma?
Yeah, I think this is kind of where you get into that territory of why we're here, right? The Oklahoma and Texas recruiting battles that are going to take place into the summer. And I think for right now, now that you've kind of had some of those spring unofficial decisions come out of the blue, there aren't a ton of imminent decisions for guys because official visit season, for the most part, is going to end up deciding some of these races. But I think for me, you look at Oklahoma, they're making a lot of movement with some of these 2025 guys. And I think coming out of this busy day, it's going to now shift towards, okay, the priority targets at offensive line, probably in the defensive backfield. Those are kind of the two position groups that I think for Oklahoma become points of emphasis going into the summer. And I think you kind of have to start with some of the guys that I know we want to get into. Kobe Sellers, the cornerback who has at one point or another had Oklahoma, Texas A&M kind of towards the top for him. Cortland Guillory, a cornerback who visited Oklahoma and Texas recently. A couple other names in the defensive backfield. Jonah Williams is going to be the biggest name, though, right? The guy that we continue to follow into the summer months. And who knows, man, the way that this thing goes sometimes, maybe it stretches into the winter. But then you go to the offensive line side as well. You got Ty Haywood, Michael Fasusi, Lamont Rogers, all still out there, the big three in Dallas-Fort Worth. And from there, it's kind of a trickle-down effect, right? Where can you get the guys that you need or want at specific positions? Because I'll say this kind of on that note. As far as decisions, it's interesting, Jordan. We mentioned they're off to such a hot start in this cycle. Well, I think part of that is because OU right now is relatively limited as far as scholarship count to spend in 2025. Last I spoke with a source, you're probably still looking at 22 to 23 takes this class, barring any major changes to the program over the spring transfer portal window. And so I think you're not necessarily talking about any actually scheduled commitment dates, because for Oklahoma, especially if you were to land two more guys today, you're getting close to the end. And so those are just some of the bigger names that Oklahoma is going to essentially prioritize into official visit season and beyond, because they just have to at this point.
Yeah. You know, the main names there for Texas and Oklahoma, we'll run through them. Sure. And I guess we'll start with Michael Fasusi. You know, Ty Haywood, he's the top rated guy of the bunch, but, you know, he seems to have the recruitment that seems to be trending towards Oklahoma more than anywhere else. That's kind of always how it's been, you know, between Haywood and Oklahoma. That's the only school he was really visiting outside of TCU, SMU for a long time now. And now that he's getting out to other schools, it's kind of remained the same with Oklahoma remaining the leader. So, you know, we'll come back to him, but with Michael Fasusi, he was at Texas yesterday, spent the majority of the day there, got a good look at McComb School of Business. And, you know, there's some Texas crystal balls here, but pretty much every source you talk to names Oklahoma and Mizzou as the main competition for Texas. So, you know, with Fasusi, what makes him so coveted first, but two, you know, where do you think Oklahoma stands right now?
Yeah, I mean, Fasusi is one of the freakiest athletic profiles in this loaded offensive line cycle, specifically down here in the state of Texas, right? I mean, this is truly one of the more talent-laden recruiting cycles, specifically offensive line, that I've seen in the Lone Star State for quite a while. And Fasusi is definitely one of the headliners. You're talking about ridiculous wingspan with an athletic profile that jumps out at the page to you. He can do literally anything pretty easily. And on top of that, I think not only is he just what you look for, size, speed, athleticism, build, right? He's muscled up at 300 plus pounds. But I also think what makes him a really coveted prospect is there is some versatility to his game as well. I think obviously he's going to play offensive tackle the next level, but I've spoken to some college sources who think he could play guard as well at an elite level too, which that lends to even more reason why you go after this guy. And I think for those reasons and more, Oklahoma and Texas, two of the best offensive line coaches in the country, and Bill Beedenbaugh and Kyle Flood have been all over Michael Fasusi. And so I think for Oklahoma, kind of going back to what we mentioned earlier, right? There was a point where I went to go see Michael Fasusi in, I want to say, summer camp when I moved back to Texas. And at that point, he mentioned emphatically that Oklahoma was not just one of the schools recruiting him the hardest. OU was probably the school atop his recruiting process because they were in communication the most. He really hadn't heard from a ton of other schools at that point. And so OU, like we talk about, they try and get out in front of these things. But as I always tell our subscribers at Sooners Illustrated, in recruiting, you got to anticipate the counterpunch. Like, just because something seems the way it does doesn't mean that this thing's going to change drastically later down the line. And that's what's taken place, right? You mentioned Missouri, serious player for obvious reasons, right? But then we've talked about this, very close to putting in a crystal ball for Texas for a number of reasons behind the scenes. I just feel like he ends up with the Longhorns. I've held back, obviously, because we've continued to cover this. You guys at Horns 24/7 have done an outstanding job of kind of keeping the pulse out of Austin on this recruiting front. And I feel like he ends up at Texas, barring some subtle change. Now, Kevin Sperry, OU's quarterback commit in 2025, this is the recruit that he's gone after the hardest. That won't change the effort. Bill Beedenbaugh is a huge Fasusi fan. So that's still going to be a presence that's relevant. But in the end, I think that if you're asking me where OU stands, I think right now it's pretty solidly behind Texas for Michael Fasusi.
Yeah, and I agree. And this wasn't even on kind of the docket, but you brought up Kevin Sperry. And he's always been a really intriguing prospect, you know, the transfers he's made, but also kind of the success he's had in the different years of his high school career, right? Going from freshman to sophomore to junior. and, you know, wasn't, I would say, the best thrower at the Elite 11 Austin, but, you know, he got invites to Nationals. And he's been a guy who, from, you know, from the day he committed, I didn't see him ever backing out of OU. I still don't see that happening. But, you know, you're seeing a lot of schools pivot to trying to take two quarterbacks a cycle. Texas is one of them. They haven't offered anyone else, but, you know, there's significant buzz behind the scenes that they would like to sign two quarterbacks in 25, with the second quarterback being Duncanville's Keelan Russell. So has, you know, Oklahoma thought about it at all? I know last year, Michael Hawkins, I personally wasn't a humongous fan of that signing. I wasn't super high on Michael Hawkins. I know others were. I know they also ended up flipping Andy Bass from Syracuse, and he was going to be one of those players that's a walk-on, but NIL kind of gives him a scholarship. But he's also going to be an offensive weapon. So what does that kind of look like? Is Oklahoma maybe evaluating taking another signal caller?
Probably not right now. I think there's a couple layers to this equation. Number one, the obvious, they just don't have a ton of scholarships to spend. And I think for Oklahoma, if you can add another scholarship player, you'd much rather do so in the defensive backfield or along the offensive line this cycle, right? Maybe even a defensive lineman, considering some of the edge rusher targets that they're involved with, but they probably don't have a ton of room to take all these guys if they actually take these leads. Then there's the other aspects of this. Number one, you have Jackson Arnold now for at least the next couple of years before he probably hits the draft. Then you have Michael Hawkins on campus, who, from what we've heard out of spring camp, Michael Hawkins is off to an incredible start. He is really enthralled everyone in the building with not just the arm talent, some of the stuff that he's flashed, but obviously his mobility. He's also kind of a little bit ahead of the curve from a maturity standpoint. You kind of expect that, the son of a former pro and college football player. So Michael Hawkins gives you a lot of comfort, but then they took two signal callers last cycle on scholarship, Brennan Zerbrug being the other one, and he's on campus as an early enrollee as well, which, look, they have Casey Thompson in the room too, so transfer portal is going to probably hover, if not this year, going into next year. But again, this all kind of blends to essentially say, I don't think OU can add another scholarship quarterback in 2025, and I think you've kind of seen them indicate that as they've pursued their 2026 signal caller targets pretty heavily.
Yeah, and we'll get to 26 in a little, because there are some important topics I want to cover in 26. But the other, you know, main name for Texas and OU throughout this cycle after Fasusi, it's kind of, you know, it's always been Fasusi as a number one guy for Texas and OU that they're going to battle over. Like, I remember the week of the Texas OU game this past fall, you went on the College Football Recruiting Show and called it the Fasusi Bowl. But
yeah,
another really important target is Shadow Creek's top 247 cornerback, Kobe Sellers. Yeah. This is a guy that actually got a crystal ball for Texas last July from R. Hank South at Horns 24/7. He's since either, I believe, has nuked the pick, deleted it, or he's changed it for Oklahoma. But now everything reflects Oklahoma. So, you know, tell me where that is from your point of view. Obviously, we talk almost every day about Texas and OU and Kobe specifically. But, you know, how's it been from your point of view? He's a guy we haven't chopped it up about in a minute.
Yeah, there is another corner, too, that we need to talk about, because we haven't been able to hop on the phone and talk about Courtland Guillory. So maybe we'll get to that as well, because that's shaping up to be a really interesting battle. But maybe a less interesting battle has become Kobe Sellers, right? I think you've hopped on the show a number of times and described why Texas and Kobe Sellers are maybe distancing a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think for Oklahoma, not only has OU essentially hit it out of the park every time he's been on campus, Zion Kearney, the freshman wide receiver, Kobe and Zion grew up together running track, so he has a relationship. Sometimes when Kobe's on campus, he gets to hang out with a lot of other players at OU who are from the greater Houston area, and so that relationship has been strong. But he has a really quality tie to Jay Valai, Brent Venables. Kobe is the guy at corner outside of maybe Tristan Haynes in this cycle, and even down to guys like Todd Bates, Miguel Chavis, Brandon Hall, elite recruiters on OU staff, but who obviously are position coaches elsewhere, they're all frequently in contact with Kobe. And he actually just visited OU, I want to say a couple days ago. It went extremely well. Some sources indicated coming out of the visit that despite Texas A&M getting him on campus and the Aggies really made a push, I actually got a little bit interested just how far Texas A&M could go with Kobe Sellers. He followed it up with that trip to Norman, and I still think Oklahoma is the leader here. I have my crystal ball pick in, and I'm feeling pretty comfortable about that selection. And then, of course, like you mentioned, some of the other stuff that's gone on with Texas, there's distance there. That's allowed OU to kind of further its standing. And so in the end, I think barring something crazy, you know, Oklahoma is going to be in the driver's seat here until – when he's likely going to make some sort of decision in July. So he has an official visit scheduled. I believe his last official visit is in Norman, and OU is going to do everything it possibly can to try and close on this guy.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of the DBs. The other guy we want to talk about is Courtland Guillory. Within the last few weeks, I put in a crystal ball prediction in favor of Texas. While I do still, you know, feel pretty good about that crystal ball prediction, I honestly don't believe that Texas is the current leader. I think it might actually be the Sooners, which makes this an even more interesting kind of DB class, DB haul for both schools. You know, in recruiting, there's always a lot of dominoes to fall. And with Courtland's situation, there might have to be some dominoes that fall. So kind of speak about what that looks like from the OU side of things for Courtland Guillory.
Yeah, man, this is getting really interesting. And this is the guy that I mentioned. Jordan and I swap intel all the time. We go back and forth on what we're hearing. And we have yet to do this for Courtland. So you're kind of getting a little behind the curtain type of action here. And OU is in a really good spot all of a sudden with Courtland Guillory. He was also a part of that visit weekend with Kobe Sellers. OU actually had almost its entire cornerback board on campus at the same time, Jordan. They had Kobe, Courtland, Siante Stewart out of the state of Ohio, who I know OU and Jay Valai, the corners coach, they like him a lot as well. Malik Hawkins was on campus too. They had four priority targets at cornerback all together in Norman. And from the sounds of it, like Courtland Guillory is now very much in play for Oklahoma in a cycle where I don't know how many corners they can take, because if you land Malik Hawkins today at noon, you're probably only able to take one to two more best case scenario at that position. And again, the names that are still out there from Courtland, Kobe, and Siante Stewart to, again, Tristan Haynes, who Texas fans may not know a ton about, but he's an in-state cornerback at Carl Albert High School in Oklahoma. OU has like two or three other current commits at Carl Albert High School. And Tristan Haynes is a top 120 player in the country for us. Elite three-phase playmaker, just really talented prospect. So Oklahoma's going to have some tough decisions to make, specifically at the cornerback position in 2025. And I think now, where I didn't really think Courtland Guillory played all that much of a role in this. In fact, I mentioned to you, I was close to putting in a Texas crystal ball. Again, man, the counterpunch concept in recruiting is always fun to follow, because now based on everything I've heard, Oklahoma might be towards the top, if not at the top currently with Courtland Guillory. And so this is going to be a Red River battle that we probably have to follow going into the summer months.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of great players, but only so many spaces and scholarships to for those players to occupy. Just because I know they kind of landed Marcus Wimberly a little bit out of the blue. I know Oklahoma was expecting to get him, but, you know, not really closer to the summer. Jonah Williams, he's also a guy who you will always have a spot for. If not, you're going to make room for him. He's someone you drop someone else for. So how do you kind of see that with the DBs? I know you really talked mostly about the corners, but they have three total defensive back commitments right now, right?
So they have Marcus Wimberly currently committed. Malik Hawkins is on deck today, and I believe that does it, but I can check real quick.
Okay. We're just going to count Malik Hawkins, because that He's Michael Hawkins' little brother. His father played at OU. The kid's most likely going to OU. So
yeah, barring any major setback over the next 30 minutes, you know, so.
Indeed, indeed. So, you know, we'll start with those two guys. Jonah's always going to have a spot. Jonah Williams, Kobe mm-hmm. Sellers will always have a spot. Tristan Haynes will always have a spot. So that'd be a phenomenal DB class, but that's five guys. How many scholarships do you think they could attribute to the DB position?
I specifically think it is five. And I think what's kind of interesting here, right, I felt for me, unless they can really stretch it and take six, you kind of have to really figure out which guys you can take who give you a little bit of versatility, right? You can, I call them a half spot, where you take somebody who maybe occupies a corner and a safety mm-hmm. position. And I think Malik Hawkins specifically does kind of occupy that role for me. If he commits to Oklahoma, he's already someone that OU has told in the recruiting process that he'd be playing corner, safety, and cheetah, which is the nickel backer role in Brent Venables' defense. So you're looking at Malik Hawkins as kind of that versatile chess piece, and then you still probably can look at other takes in the cycle. But I think if Jonah Williams, Tristan Haynes, Kobe Sellers, Cortland Guillory, a name we haven't mentioned yet for Oklahoma specifically, Amarion Robinson out of the state of Arkansas is a target that they're high on as well, and he just dropped his top five. Some believe that OU might be able to land him as well. Then you get into the Siante Stewarts too, and some other names. Like, I know in theory, certain players always have spots, but like, I truly think Oklahoma could get to a point where Jonah Williams will always have a spot, and that might be it, right? I mean, because I think Tristan Haynes leaving the state now more than ever before is kind of a realistic scenario that people have to anticipate. And a lot of that, too, has to do with the fact that Cortland Guillory, Siante Stewart, Malik Hawkins, some of these other guys that we're talking about, they're very much in play for OU right now, right? So this is something that's been really hard to track for Oklahoma, because you always kind of have a rough estimate as far as how many you can take and who you can take at what position. But it's also legitimately going to be probably a point where OU has to sit down and say, okay, can we figure out a way to alter some things and add more to 2025? Or are we going to tell very talented players no? And we have yet to know the answer to that question.
Yeah, and you know, that's something that every school deals with each year is putting the puzzle pieces together. How are they going to fit? And you know, it sucks that usually once we get closer to signing day and a class is full and a school ends up with someone they didn't anticipate getting, that you know they got to remove someone from the class. But you know, that's recruiting. That's how it is. That's how it works. It's fluid. You got to wait for some dominoes to fall, and you know that's what we're doing. So.
Yeah.
Before you, I guess, or to get out of the kind of Texas OU battles, I guess we could throw Haywood in there, but that kind of feels like David versus Goliath at this point with OU and Texas, just with where that is.
Yeah. Do you want to talk Lamont Rogers on the offensive line front?
Yeah. So you're my Lamont guy. you're the first one who's, you know, really banging the door down for him to be a top 100 prospect, top 247 guy. And you know, well, he is every bit of one. He also plays a goalie for Mesquite Horn's varsity soccer team. He is a center as well. You've even seen him play basketball. So, yeah, just tell me about him besides the multi-sport athletic, you know, background. What else makes him special? And, you know, what with his recruitment? You're tapped in over there at Mesquite Horn. What's going on?
Yeah, I told him, speaking on the basketball note, obviously I've been in his corner as an elite prospect, but if he scored 50 on any given night, I told him we'd make him a five-star. He didn't do that. But his athletic upside at verified 6'6.5", borderline 6'7", 305 to more pounds, Lamont is someone who the guy, there's development to work on in his game specifically as an offensive tackle, right? But he's from the state of Mississippi. He moved down to the state of Texas to better his game and develop as a player. And the thing about Lamont is not only do some people in the college realm think this guy has maybe the highest ceiling out of the big three that we talk about, just because of the athletic traits combined with just a ridiculous frame. This guy's also incredibly coachable. Like, he is a, as Cooper Patagna says, Mississippi mud dog who's willing to get into the grit, and he's not going to be upset if you yell at him or whatever else. Lamont's one of my favorites in this cycle to cover, and we've built a really good relationship. And because of that, knowing him, knowing some people in his camp, you know, this is another who Oklahoma went after really heavily. Him, Fasusi, and Ty Haywood, OU was involved with very heavily, very early in the process. But I'm here to back you up. I think you reported yesterday that Texas made serious ground with Lamont at a time where, just going to be honest, Texas had a lot of ground to cover, right, for a few different reasons that we can't dive into. But it sounds like that was accomplished. Texas has a few different advantages from my vantage point, knowing Lamont the way that I do. You mentioned it. Not only does he have a great relationship with Michael Fasusi, who I think is also trending Texas direction, I think that Lamont, well, he doesn't like flash. I think that there's a lot of intrigue as far as the actual development that he could receive under Kyle Flood. It's now proof in the pudding with what Texas fields along the offensive line. I also think there's a layer to this that no one really talks about. And you mentioned it actually earlier. You know, Lamont is someone who has talked about doing everything from starting his own clothing brands post-grad to opening up his own restaurants. And he's talked a lot about, to me, how important a business degree is. Obviously, McCombs at Texas could play a serious role in this recruitment as well if he gives Texas a hard look, which it sounds like that's happening. And then obviously NIL opportunities at Texas, there's going to be a number of ways for him to capitalize on his name, image, and likeness. So it all kind of paints a really pretty picture. It was just about fixing the relationships, and you got to give a DFW legend and Chris Gilbert a ton of credit. I think that since he's been hired, the ship has kind of been right in the right direction for Texas. And so Oklahoma, you know, you had Lamont on campus not too long ago, and that visit went extremely well. But I also think Oklahoma is an absolute dogfight with not just Texas, but Texas A&M, who I think is very realistically a landing spot for Lamont. And then Missouri. And depending on who you talk to, whenever Lamont takes that Missouri official visit, there's a lot of people keeping a close eye on that trip as well. So this recruiting battle for Lamont Rogers is getting really interesting to follow behind the scenes. And I think for Texas and Oklahoma, this thing is now becoming more murky than ever before, because one might be rising and one might be dropping a little bit in kind of a really talented top four group for him.
Yeah. And, you know, to kind of bounce off what you said, A&M and Texas, and again, I did report a little bit of this yesterday, but A&M and Texas seem to be the main two schools kind of at this point, and the source I spoke with over the last few days believes the recruitment's going to come down to those two, with the third school being Missouri. And, you know, I was kind of interested by that, because Mizzou, it feels like Lamont, out of the handful of Texas kids that Mizzou has kind of come out of the blue for, feels like Lamont might have been the first one that I heard about. So, you know, I asked the source with Mizzou, why do you think they'd maybe drop out with these other two kind of coming on strong? And, you know, he doesn't want to go far from home. He doesn't want to go far from family. It's really important to him being able to be close to family within just, you know, a short little drive down I-35 to go see him in Mesquite. Yeah. And another thing that I haven't really seen be talked about in this recruitment, but whenever Kyle Flood tells Lamont he's not going anywhere anytime soon to take another job, Lamont Rogers believes that. Whenever it's coaches at other schools, offensive line coaches who haven't lasted more than 2 or 3 years at any of the stops they've made over the last 10, 15 years, he's struggling to believe that. So,
yeah.
You know, he's a really smart kid. He's got a great head on his shoulders, like you said. He's already talked about potential business ventures, you know, once money really starts coming his way. But, you know, with Texas, they have such an advantage here, because Texas really isn't one of those programs you take a job at as a coach to go try to get another job. I'm not saying that's what Mizzou is, but, you know, with Brandon Jones or Brandon Jordan, apologies if I'm messing up on his name, the offensive line coach, you know, he's a younger guy, and he's not as proven and as established as guys like Bill Beatenbo or Kyle Flood, where, again, right, when those dudes are telling Lamont and his family, we're not going anywhere, they believe it. So, you know, having such a concrete offensive line coach, and I always forget he also has the offensive coordinator title, even though Sark is who calls plays. But, man, the security and culture and everything in Austin with Kyle Flood, like, that stands out because so many of these kids, obviously the college, the campus, the money, all those other things are important. But a lot of recruiting is just coming down to relationships and how much you trust someone, how much you trust that they're actually going to be there for you and not go take another job to where you got to go portal to stick with them. And mm-hmm. that's important to Lamont and his family. They don't want to go somewhere where they have to enter the portal or think about it. They don't want to go somewhere where they have to even think about their commitment. They want to be able to give it, and that's it, and it's done, and then he signs on signing day. So, you know, it's going to be interesting how this one shakes out. He's also looking at maybe taking some unofficial visits to, I think, Florida State, LSU, Alabama, Oregon. I know, you know, we share some sources on this one, so if I miss a school, feel free to share it. But
Tennessee in there as well, I would say.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting. The Texas official visits June 14th through 16th. You know, while you might be like, oh, that's not the last weekend, it actually will be for Rodgers. The last official visit weekend is June 21st through 23rd. However, Rodgers' mother is going to be out of town that weekend, so they kind of set all their OVs a week early. So he's going to see SMU May 17th through 19th, Mizzou the 31st through June 2nd. A&M will be, I believe, the 6th through the 8th, and then because he's doing it a day early on a Thursday, and then Texas will be the 14th through the 16th. So a lot of things lining up Texas's way. The source I spoke with indicated that Rodgers is going to have his commitment done at least before the end of the month of July, and he even believes there's a chance he gets it done before the end of June. So a lot of things that are lining up Texas's way, but, you know, I guess to start again at the front, none of this happens without Chris Gilbert. If Chris Gilbert doesn't come back to Austin and take the he didn't take the job. It was essentially created for him, the special assistant to the head coach. We're not talking about Lamont Rodgers, and I would bet a fair amount of money he doesn't even have an official visit booked. So, you know, you got to clap it up for Chris Gilbert and Jamal Fenner as well. He's also been a part of this as well. They've kind of tag-teamed this one. And if Texas ends up, you know, getting this one over the finish line while – his 24/7 sports profile will say Kyle Flood is the primary. Like all the work, the real work in this one was done by Chris Gilbert and Fenner. So gotta give them a round of applause. But some other guys we talk about in the state of Texas that, you know, Texas might not have even really looked at, but the OU's in the mix for. Torrey Blaylock was kind of a guy like that. Texas recruited him a fair amount early on, but you know, as the cycle progressed, they really honed in and focused on other guys and kind of went away from Blaylock. But there's a couple other names like that in the state of Texas. Max Granville, he's one of them. Who are some other guys that you think OU could be the leader for, or, you know, is in the mix for that we haven't covered yet that's in the state of Texas?
Yeah, I would say Max Granville is probably where you start, right? He's going to be really interesting to track over the next few months. I think OU answered a lot of questions during an unofficial visit that he took around the same time as some guys like Kobe Sellers, Jonah Williams, Landon Rank, for example. And since then, Oklahoma's been in a really good position. I would say going over the next few months, though, while Texas isn't necessarily a player, Texas A&M and Penn State, I believe, are very much contenders for Max Granville. And I would say it's to the point now where I have my crystal ball pick in for Oklahoma for Max Granville. I still feel good about it, but I definitely do not feel as good about it as I once did. And I think that both Penn State and Texas A&M have a real opportunity with Max Granville. And I'll say this, you know, Max is going to be one who Oklahoma fits in so many different ways, but I think Max has done it the right way, kind of speaking on the OU and Texas front. Max has really wanted to kind of expand his horizons a bit, kind of similar to what Landon Rink was telling us at Under Armour Houston. Some of these Texas area guys, they want to see other schools because we talk about the big three in the region so much between A&M, Texas, and Oklahoma. By that time, they've probably all unofficialed with these schools four or five times. So Granville, to me, kind of fits that umbrella. I think the other one that definitely sticks out is Ty Haywood, right? The offensive tackle out of Denton Ryan. This, from what I've heard at Oklahoma, if Michael Vasusi is a tier A offensive tackle, like Ty Haywood might be right up there. OU thinks the world of Ty Haywood. This is probably one of their overall priority targets in this class. And I think it's tricky because Ty definitely, to me, is leaning Oklahoma's direction. But Ty is another one who I've got a pretty solid relationship, and he's a wild card, to say the least.
And fun fact, like Lamont Rogers, he also hails Mississippi originally. He's got a 660 right. area code. So,
yeah, and not only is Ty Haywood similar to Lamont in that they're both from Mississippi, moved down to the state of Texas to develop. Ty has barely played the game of football. He's very raw. I believe he just wrapped up his second or third season overall of playing this game. But Ty is also someone who he will show up on visits with friends or teammates. And I think it's almost kind of an out of the blue thing because he kind of goes to the beat of his own drum. He's a very down to earth, quiet kid. He doesn't like to put a lot out there. And because of that, I think you could see Ty Haywood pop up at a couple of different places over the summer. And all of a sudden we're talking about, OU's probably most likely get an offensive tackle from an elite perspective outside of Foje. All of a sudden, maybe we're talking about a couple other schools. And the last one that I would probably say off the top of my head is Emmanuel Choice, the wide receiver out of Lancaster. Oklahoma involved with TCU for sure, Baylor, Nebraska. And I believe Missouri is the other official visit for him on the slate. And
he's – sorry to cut you off, but he's a really, really intriguing guy to me because – like, I'm not going to get into the Texas wide receiver board right now, but I know for a fact if Emmanuel Choice called Texas and wanted to commit right now, they would take it. And not only would they take it, they would let him post the graphics. So that being said, there really hasn't ever been anything with Emmanuel Choice in Texas. He came in on the junior day. I think he might have posted a top six or top seven or something like that. They had the UT logo in there, but you never really hear anything on Emmanuel Choice in Texas besides, talk to some coaches at Lancaster. They're telling me Chris Jackson, he's still reaching out. He's still in contact, but that's really it. So kind of with his recruitment, I know he's got a few OVs booked. That was actually the guy who put a few of them on his profile. And you mentioned OU and TCU. I know, like you said at the beginning of the show, I think that OU was his first offer, or at least I remember it was his first offer. When Emmett Jones went and got him last spring, Emmett Jones being, such a big name in Dallas, kind of similar figure to that of Chris Gilbert. Is Oklahoma in the driver's seat here? What's it looking like for Emmanuel Choice? And also, I know we talked about how interesting the DB dominoes are with spots at OU. I know it's kind of getting full over there with receiver too. So how does that have an effect in this recruitment as well?
Yeah, so to lead off with that as it relates to Emmanuel Choice, there was a world once where I thought Oklahoma might look to take four wide receivers in 2025. After losing Jaden Nickens, he decommitted from the program. It really kind of came down to the fact that I think Oklahoma and Jaden Nickens realized they both kind of wanted different things. Nickens wants to play both football and basketball the next level. OU's really got to hone in on who they're taking and how effective that scholarship spot is going to be because, again, they're limited and they want to make sure the guys that they're taking are around for the long haul. So after Jaden Nickens and OU split ways, I think that was when they kind of stepped back and said, look, we've got Emmett Jones. That guy is as good, if not one of the best in the country at recruiting the receiver position. he's in on a number of targets for us currently, and he can cover ground pretty quickly with a couple others, like Andrew Marsh, for example. But as it relates to Emmanuel Choice, they still have two receivers committed in Elijah Thomas, who I mentioned earlier, and then Grayson Harris out of Ennis, Texas. I do think what helps Emmanuel Choice is that OU and Emmett Jones, they like to kind of recruit the receiver position like a basketball team. They like specific roles at that spot. And if you look, last cycle literally played out. They had Ivan Carrion, who was 6'6", verified, 205 pounds, a giant on the perimeter. But then they went and got KJ Daniels out of Louisiana and Zion Raggins out of the state of Georgia. Two dudes, not just from southeastern states, you don't really see OU pull a ton from, but they're also both about 5'8", 5'9", and have world-class track speed. So they kind of like to recruit different skill sets and almost play chess at the receiver position. That helps Emmanuel because he's verified, what, 6'3 and a half, 6'4"? Really quality frame. I would say he's into the 190s. He continues to fill out very effectively each time I see him. But what hurts Emmanuel right now is, while I think OU is in the driver's seat, I don't know that Oklahoma can really take any wide receivers right now until they have a firm grasp of the picture going into the summer, right? Because you've got Choice. You've got Quincy Porter from New Jersey, who's another 6'3", 6'4", 190-plus pounder that OU's gone after a little bit more heavily recently. And Quincy Porter, I believe, is number 190 overall for us in the top 247, really talented player. You've got Andrew Marsh, a couple other talents, but then there's also kind of this, what I call the Caleb Cunningham cloud for Oklahoma, which, five-star wide receiver out in the state of Mississippi, former OU offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby is the head coach of Mississippi State, and Mississippi State, to me, has been the longtime leader for Caleb Cunningham. Even speaking with people in his camp, I have a hard time seeing Caleb really consider leaving. However, OU continues to kind of at least appear to be in the mix for official visit, so we'll see how that goes. But for Emmanuel Choice specifically, it's just like a weird puzzle that has yet to be put together. And so what exactly he is as a puzzle piece in all of this, I think still has to be identified going into official visit season.
Got it. So we got about 10 minutes left, y'all. So if you got any questions for Colin or I or both of us, feel free to start putting them in the comments. And, you know, with only 10 minutes, we're kind of limited with the different ways we can go. But I kind of want to get away from recruiting for a little and, you know, talk actual football, OU football team. Who are there any guys? I know you mentioned Michael Hawkins surprised a lot of people, seems to be kind of ahead of schedule. I know just through going through Twitter, Jaden Jackson is turning a lot of heads. Yeah. Not surprised at all. Me and you were both drooling over his performance at the IMG Lipscomb game we attended in August. And I mean, even whenever he committed to Oklahoma, I tried to tell everyone on our board, like, I know this kid's a three-star, but this is one of the three stars you actually really, really, really want. So who are some guys that are standing out? And also, you know, you're one in the SEC for both of the programs that we cover. How are you thinking they're going to do? And what's that schedule looking like? I know it's supposed to be harder than Texas schedule, yeah. But I couldn't tell you who they're playing off the top of my head besides Texas at the Cotton Bowl and yeah, so –
yeah.
How's it going this spring?
Yeah, man, it's a huge spring for a number of different reasons, right? Like, as you mentioned, not only are you going into the SEC first season in a new conference, but there's a lot of general turnover at Oklahoma, right? You have technically three new coordinators. New defensive coordinator Zach Alley, the Brent Venables protege, he takes over that side of the ball. Seth Luttrell, Joe John Finley, the offensive coordinator and co-offensive coordinator, respectively, both former players at Oklahoma, both longtime coaching institutions in college football, guys that Brent Venables has given the reins to sort of call the shots at a place that means a lot to them. But then you've got Jackson Arnold, first year, right? I mean, this is going to be the Jackson Arnold show. And I know a lot of people talk about the bowl game performance. I think that's a little bit overblown because there were some moments where he was special. There were moments where he struggled, but I always tell people the story. Jackson Arnold's first start as a freshman at Denton Guyer was the state championship game, and it did not go well. And then he became the National Gatorade Player of the Year, one of the best quarterbacks in the state of Texas, elite five-star talent. Jackson Arnold, have heard really good things to this point, but then you kind of get into the nitty-gritty. The turnover has helped some of these younger guys that you're asking. Jaden Jackson, to me, is – he was a guy that Texas was involved with, if you'll remember. Texas, at one point, a lot of people thought he was going to end up at UT, especially coming out of a visit that he took.
We had stories written.
Yeah.
And graphics made. If I dig through my phone, I bet I could find his Texas commitment graphic in like 2 minutes.
I want to say we were at State 7 on. And Hudson Standish, who's now on our national scouting team, we were in the hotel room, like, getting ready to go back out. And I think Hudson was getting the story ready, Jaden Jackson to go to Texas. He's now at Oklahoma. You mentioned we watched him play for IMG when they came and played Lipscomb Academy in Nashville. And that was when I was just, like, seeing him in person. Jaden Jackson's a monster, and he's been that since he's been at Oklahoma. I'll put it this way. I still am very hesitant to say he could legitimately be a starter for OU next year. I don't want to go that far. But, like, in a world where OU is going to rotate a defensive tackle pretty heavily, Jaden Jackson might be one of, if not the first guy off the bench. And then you've got David Stone, the five-star right, who has had flashes of dominance in spring camp at times. And those two, along with some of the other newcomer defensive linemen, have been huge for Oklahoma as they prepare for the SEC. Well, I can't run through everyone, obviously, but I will say this. The new players, so those are the freshmen, a couple other guys. I think people forget, too, another player that Texas was involved with in the transfer portal, but at the time, I believe Texas was also still heavily recruiting both Matthew Golden.
This is Jaden Jackson's commitment graphic from June 24th. So,
Jaden Jackson was potentially going to end up in Texas. I'll tell you, man, Texas was recruiting out of the portal. Matthew Golden, I want to say Juice Wells was still on the board at this time, and then Deion Burks, the transfer receiver out of Purdue. And that, the way I put it, I don't know how it happened, but OU just so happened to land, in my opinion, an NFL football player in the transfer portal at the receiver position, their most loaded position group on campus right now. Like, I don't think it's very fair, but Deion Burks, I'm telling you this right now. He came in, and from day one, everyone in the program was like, this dude might legitimately be our best receiver now. And that's with Andrell Anthony, Nick Anderson, Jaden Gibson, Jaleel Farouk, the list goes on and on. Deion has been incredible in spring camp, but it comes down to the offensive line, right? They're replacing essentially all five starters. I don't have a ton to say on that right now because I think a lot of that relates to the schedule that you asked me about. You know, OU's non-con should be relatively easy to get through. I mean, you're playing, what, Temple, Houston, and Tulane to start. But, man, right into SEC play, Jordan, we're going to find out. Like, they play Tennessee in Norman. They follow that up with a road trip to Jordan-Hare, play Auburn, in a place where things get weird, right? Then they play that Texas game. They have South Carolina and Norman, but then they got to go to Ole Miss at a time where Ole Miss might be one of the best teams in college football. And then to close the year after a game against Maine, they go at Missouri, which is going to be basically a rivalry game. So much on the table for that week. They go to Missouri. They bring Alabama to Norman, and then they go to Death Valley and Baton Rouge at LSU to end the season.
Sheesh.
Man, it's a gauntlet, their first year in the SEC. Like,
so I'm apologies if I'm going to piss off any OU fans who might be watching this, but like, realistically, how many games do you think they'd have to lose to get fired?
Oh, I don't think.
I know that's not really being talked about, but like, I knew their schedule was bad, but dude, that's effing nuts. And it's crazy. That's not even the worst one. Go look at Florida's.
I know. I'll say this is I got to get out of here.
For sure.
I know, Brent, I know a lot of people are going to wonder what the record looks like for Oklahoma and how that impacts Brent Venables. I truly believe that Brent Venables is going to be in Norman at least for the next 2 years of SEC play because the guy is recruited at a top eight or better level. Statistically, he is recruiting better than Lincoln Riley, which is crazy.
And the most important thing about that is not only is he recruiting at a better level, he's actually recruiting dudes on the defensive side of the ball. And they do their fair share of getting guys in the trenches. Another guy I want to ask you about, I know you got to run real quick, but David Stone. For sure. Texas fans hate that guy because all he did was troll. How's he doing?
No, he's been awesome. He is – the thing with David, Jaden to me has an incredibly high floor right now. Mm-hmm. David, the intel you get out of spring is like, man, what this guy shows at times – the ceiling for him is legitimately first round talent. And I think, again, that kind of goes to why I think Brent Venables is going to stick around for the long haul. The fact that they have both of those dudes on campus and a number of other defensive players, the defense is actually really good, which just has not been in the case at Oklahoma. They're getting better. And again, they're not only doing all of this, but going into next season, the record, first-year starting quarterback, five new starters on the offensive line, one of the toughest schedules in college football. I think with all the newness, it's hard to really judge Brent Venables specifically going into next season. Now, beyond that, that's where I think we really get into the evaluation period. But I think the way that Brent and this coaching staff, his assistant coaches are really good. I think that this group is up to the task, but it's really going to come down to, are you a better football team than your record indicates, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So I know you got to run. We got BK back in the waiting room, so if you want to dip out, you can.
For sure.
Yeah. Good luck with the commitments. I know you won't need it for Hawkins, but Trent Wilson, is that supposed to be OU?
I have a crystal ball pick in. Yeah.
Okay. So. Got it. And then Cooper Perry's likely Oregon.
Yeah. From what I've heard, it's basically should be a done deal to Oregon. So.
Well, dope. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. And anyone, I doubt there's many interested in OU. But if you are, get over to Sooners Illustrated, get you a subscription. Colin, he runs the market for OU recruiting. He's the best. It's not close. So go spend your $10.99 a month with 24/7. And yeah, get out of here, Colin.
All right. I'll see you guys.
See ya. Oh, BK, double R, how are we doing?
Good. Good stuff with Colin, man. It's always interesting to hear what's going on north of the Red River and whether Texas fans are willing to admit it or not. We're always keeping close tabs on Oklahoma. So
yeah,
I hate hearing that Oklahoma is doing well on the recruiting front. And I hope they do miserably on the recruiting front and on the field this fall. But I waited till Colin was gone before I made sure to say that, Jordan.
Oh, no, you're all good. He gets more than an earful for me about that. So, but no, I mean, look, like I get it for the fans that hate other schools. I get it. You don't want to know. But like, man, they're at this time of the year. If you are a true recruiting fan, you need to be paying attention to the other schools because so much of this shit matters with dominoes. Like, I wrote about it in our Stampede on Monday. Keelan Russell, the Duncanville quarterback who's committed to SMU, visited A&M on Saturday, and A&M told him, hey, Hassan Longstreet, the five-star from California, we're anticipating landing him when he commits on April 14th, but if he doesn't, you are going to be our number one target at the position. I've never heard of anything like that. But that is the worst possible thing that could happen for Texas because if you're trying to flip a kid from SMU, the worst thing you want is A&M on the other side jacking the price up.
Yep.
Because it's already going to be expensive with SMU. They're prepared to make Keelan Russell the highest paid player legally in SMU history. So That being said, like, you got to pay attention to these things. So whenever Hassan Longstreet, who most people viewed Auburn as the main competition for A&M, showed up to USC yesterday, that stuff matters on the Texas board, even though Texas hasn't even offered Keelan Russell yet. So, you know, it's always important to visit what's going on with the other schools, because those dominoes are going to have an effect on Texas one way or another. So,
yeah, man. Yeah. And I always thought it was a big deal before, where you wanted to know what was going on with other schools. I mean, with your rivals, you know, whatever the case is. But like you're talking about now, Jordan, when you're talking about being able to offer money and being able to offer all these different things, I mean, that can flip somebody that fast, man. So, yeah, I want to know what's going on over there, because that's a direct reflection on what happens here, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And it's impossible to predict where these kids are going to go and what they're going to do. And that makes your job fun, Jordan, but I'm sure incredibly infuriating at times, too.
The worst thing is just, like, it hasn't happened to me, but, like, it hasn't happened to me yet, because I know it's coming. But the recruitments that you really spend a lot of time on and kind of invest your life into, by just how much time you spend driving places, at places, kissing ass with certain people, you know, shaking hands, all that. So where when a kid commits, it's 3.5 years you put in developing this relationship with them, this trust with them. And then after a year, they're in the portal and it's like, are you serious? You know? Yeah. And again, it hasn't happened to me yet, but I know it's coming. And it's like, I really spent that much time at that guy's school and kissing this dude's ass to have this story. And he never even played a snap at Texas and is now at UTSA or whatnot. You know, things like that. I know it's coming. I know it's coming.
Yeah. So Jordan, how often is it for you, like, when you're talking to these kids? And you know, I always say my gut feeling. You know, when you're talking to these kids and they're telling you whatever the case is and they're going to commit this way, how often is it for you where you're like, okay, I'm buying this, but I'm not really buying this right now?
It depends on the kid. So for me, I'm always trying to get a high school coach, an NIL guy, a parent, possibly someone around the kid who can tell me what's going on. Because I know, you know, the kid, he's not going to tell me everything. So usually you can't really figure out what's true and what's not unless you have someone close that's actually telling you most of the info. But like, man, there's been plenty of times where, and you know, it's not great, but like there's plenty of times where there's a kid who I know Texas is barely talking to. And if that kid tried to commit, Texas probably wouldn't even pick up the phone for. But that kid's going to tell me how him and Sark talk twice a week, or how him and another coach talk. And the whole time I'm just like, I know it's bullshit. I'm not going to say anything. It's a 16, 17 year old. But like, there's plenty of times like that. It's also like the same things when you get calls from handlers or 7-on-7 coaches, trainers being like, hey, this is happening, or this is happening, or the coach said this to him, or someone you work with said they're going to give him this many. And it's like, no, dude. I'm not a dumbass. When you've been around, you know how to filter through different things. So
my favorite is when my star recruit like releases his top eight, and you've got like Bama, Georgia, Texas, LSU on there, and it's like, what are you doing here? What are you talking about here? None of these schools are actually offering you a scholarship. Like, why? Who are you fooling with this deal?
Yeah. And like, there's so much of recruiting now that's just for show, and there's so much BS involved with it. Like, each year I give a presentation for 7-on-7 developmental program in Austin. I do some work with Juice 7-on-7. And each time it's like, okay, do y'all want to go play dress up and do photo shoots, or do you want to actually get recruited and try to decide what's best for the next 60 years of your life, you know?
Yeah,
because like at the end of the day, I understand. I've been 16 and 17 too. I understand your dumbass showing up wearing slides to a visit and you're hitting on the recruiting assistant or some shit. I understand it. I've made mistakes too. But like, at the end of the day, you got to have common sense. And so many of these kids, just there's no one holding them accountable, and everyone babies them because they'll see the kid as their ticket out too. And to where it's like, there's so many times when I'll meet a recruit as a sophomore and he has 30 plus offers and is going to be a kid who's going to make $400,000+ year one. And it'll take 2 minutes of talking to him, his dad maybe, to know this kid is not going to work out at the college level. You either got it or you don't. And it's very easy to tell sometimes if a kid has it in them to kind of survive that test of college football, because a lot of them just aren't built for it. And it's, there's a lot of welcome to college moments for a lot of these kids. So,
sure.
You know, it's about moving through that and continuing to mature and all that. But I know I'm kind of talking myself in circles.
Yeah, that's all right.
Get out of here, but I'll see y'all boys tomorrow. Hopefully Jeff is recovered by then. So
for the record, I can't fault a kid for hitting on the recruiting coordinator, because I probably would do that at the age of 30 too.
I was just giving an example. Like, kids just do so much dumb shit. And it's like, it's so funny to me, because there's always fans on our board like, but he's visited this many times, or he said this in the past. It's like, y'all, they're on their phone like 75% of the visit. They're not even listening half the time. Like, it's hard in our job too, because with NIL now, it's such an interesting topic. Like, are we going to report this? Are we not? But it's like, that's the most important thing. Like, for some of these, so I'm not ever going to name them, but for some of these kids in 2025 right now, I know no matter what the hell they're going to tell me or say, or the schools that are in it, none of that shit matters 2 months from now when they're on official visits and money actually starts getting talked. Mm-hmm. All that goes out the window. All the relationship building for the last 2-3 years goes out the window, and it comes down to who's going to give me the biggest check. And then I have to be like, yeah, this team won out because relationships and all. Like, no, that's not what happened.
Yeah. Well, and for the record, I had to run to HEB in between shows, and I went in socks and slides. So
yeah, there you go.
Kind of the same thing right there. Kind of the same thing.
You're not trying to earn a life-changing scholarship offer, though. That's right. Getting your height, weight, arm, hand, all that.
I just need some spaghetti. That's all that I'm trying to do at this point.
Well, all right. I'll actually get out of here, but I'll see y'all tomorrow, as always.
Appreciate it, brother. Thanks, man. Great job.
Good day.